Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
What is up, my fellow addicts? Great episode this week. We have Shannon Larkin from Godsmack and Apocalypse Blues Revival. While I want you to listen to the whole episode, because it is a great episode, he's such a cool dude. There's never been a more interesting first, I think, ever. So you definitely want to stick around for the first. Really unique dude. I've been a fan of Godsmack forever. This new band is really cool as well. Shannon Larkin, just a great, great dude. Known from Shiprocked and stuff. Remember, we do the show every single Wednesday, every single Saturday. 5 days later, it comes out everywhere for free. Be it YouTube, iTunes, Google Podcasts, wherever, Spotify. But maybe you're a big fan. Maybe you just want to support the show. Maybe you don't like hearing commercials. You just go to GasDigitalNetwork.com, use the code SDR30, try it out. You get access to 20 other shows, all in HD, live chat, and a ton of other perks as well. Don't like it, cancel. Who gives a shit? You know, we just want you to enjoy the show. That's all that matters. This week's episode is with James Mattern. Jay was away this week, couldn't do it for us. No big deal. But here it is right now, the Shannon Larkin episode of The SDR Show.
This is the intro to the shit show. Sex, drugs, and rock. This is a hit show, show me a tit show. Please, someone fuck the hoe. It's weed, I beat, it's hookers and blow. It's art, it's art, you need to know. The SDR Show, let's go.
It is the SDR Show, sex, drugs, and rock and roll show. I am Ralph Sutton. With me as always, we're going to go with Shannon H, and we'll explain why in a minute. And I think prematurely, James Mattern got really excited when I said with me as always, but not as always, but with
not
me.
As always.
Pretty regularly these days. It's James Mattern. How are you, buddy?
What up, baby? This is so exciting.
I'm proud that you sound better this week. So this time you sound good. Your lighting is decent. You got a good angle.
I'm not on a messy bed, but I also, even though I'm not, because we're not recording in that room with that bed, I still made it right before I did this. You've changed me. I almost sent you and Shannon a picture of the made bed. I'm a new person, baby.
Makes me very happy. Follow us everywhere at the SDR Show. Don't forget to give a 5-star review. And now, very happy to have this dude on. Met him a half a dozen times, but he's more important than me. So why would he know who I am, James?
Everyone knows who you is, baby. You're number one.
From the new band, well, sort of new band, Apocalypse Blues Revival, and of course from Godsmack, it is Shannon Larkin. How are you, sir?
Hi, doing good. Thank you.
I'm going to tell you a quick story to just kind of pace out this interview. You ready?
All right.
I'm going to go back to, I think, 1990, maybe, 89, somewhere in that area. I was a DJ and promoter at a club called The Limelight in New York City. And my first night there, DJing, promoting, Wrathchild America was the headliner.
Wow.
So that's how long ago I met you, but why would you remember that?
Because The Limelight, the venue, that giant, beautiful church, and my God, I saw King's X there, I think, in 1988 or something, and you know, always wanted to play there, and then Wrathchild got the gig, and I'll never forget it. It was one of my favorite gigs of all time. What a venue.
And it sticks in my head. I had it up. I was going to try and find it. I couldn't find it, but because that was such an important night to me, my first night as a promoter and DJ at The Limelight on Sunday Night's Rock and Roll Church, I kept the little ticket that they used to give out, and I had it for years. I just can't fucking find it. It would be cool to have shown you that ticket from 30 years ago or whatever it is now. But that was a great, probably the best rock venue that has ever existed.
It was so cool. It was magical inside. I remember it was a great crowd even. Like I said, I think, did King's X play the same night we played? But
I think they might have. They kind of see that in my head now. Because they used to be like 2 or 3 bands on a night. I mean, I was there for about a year and a half. And I got to see so many incredible bands there. Like Tool played, and who was there that was amazing? Oh, I saw the first Pearl Jam show ever in New York was there. It was crazy. That was a great venue.
Yeah, man. I totally remember it and always will. It was great.
Yeah, we got the shut down one night because L.A. Guns was playing when their ballad blew up, Ballad of Jane, if you remember that song, but it blew up and there were so many people in the venue that the fire department came in and shut us down. And we had to sit there. I was DJing and I had to sit there for like 2 hours to wait for the all clear. And when we finally got the all clear, we played the opening to Enter Sandman by Metallica and the place went batshit crazy. It was really that was the venue to be at. I mean, every stripper, I think, in a 50-mile radius came to try and bang whichever rock star was going to be there that week. It was crazy.
That was just a bonus. But I will say this, when speaking of Wrathchild America, right? So, you know, those guys, we were together for like 12 years, you know, and so we're still dear friends and they've gone on to do other stuff or whatever. And but Brad Divins, the singer and bass player of that band, Wrathchild, you know, he made it like on the other side of the fence as a sound engineer, right? He's Enrique Iglesias, his sound guy, who is like huge worldwide. I mean, he does mixes stadiums, all this shit. And on the Wrathchild tip, he reached out to us like 2 weeks ago. And so we made Wrathchild t-shirts that you can go online and buy. There's a Wrathchild America Surrounded by Idiots, which our single. It just happened like literally 2 weeks ago in case any
full circle
fans that see this. I mean, we didn't have many fans, but we had, you know, a pretty strong like cult following.
I'm shitting this off the top of my head. Am I right that the single was like climbing up the walls or climbing the walls? Is that right?
That's right. Climbing the Walls was the first one. The second album was 91, and that was Surrounded by Idiots. And
Look at that. Look at me. Fucking. And then here's a little interesting, James, a little interesting tidbit. Three bands that after Wrathchild that I know of that you were in, which is kind of weird because one you're still in now, Godsmack, you entered all these bands on the third record. And that would be Ugly Kid Joe, Candlebox, Godsmack on the third record. And then coincidentally, you're here today for technically the third record, although the first, because the name changed from Apocalypse Blues. What was it originally? I forget, but now Revival. So something about the number three for you must have some dear meanings.
Yes. I mean, you know, the Holy Trinity, I don't know. I'm just grasping at straws here, but the number three is certainly a great number. I only had one child, so my family's three. I don't know.
I go back to Ugly Kid Joe just quickly, then we'll get to today. You came in on the third record, but they're an interesting band because a lot of people may not realize this. I think we talked about this on the show a couple weeks ago. Their name came from, they were opening up for Pretty Boy Floyd and they didn't have a name. So they just called themselves Ugly Kid Joe and that's how they got their name. But that was before you were in the band, but that's a pretty funny story for them. And then we had the Kevin from Candlebox and we had someone else from Candlebox on a couple weeks ago. And then obviously your superstardom with Godsmack, which I think I read somewhere that you had like, is it the most charting singles of a new rock band since like with Shinedown? Like you're in the same level as Shinedown, the most singles or something. Did I read that wrong?
No, that's truth, man.
That's pretty wild. That's crazy.
We're really lucky. We're lucky dudes.
That's pretty wild. James has a question. Now you know when James has a question, he leans forward. Go ahead.
Remember, I'm the student, man. I'm sitting at the table. I'm just like Iggy Pop, baby. I'm the passenger. Shannon, I barely know you, sir, but you're the most likable person I've ever seen in my life. The 5 minutes, you are the most zen guest I've ever seen here, and you're like recording in like some kind of mystical egg, like you're the caterpillar in Alice in Wonderland, and you're the best. This is great. I might not even talk. Look, come on. Now you've got even more points. This is amazing.
That looks like a chair. I think that chair was in a Woody Allen movie, or was it Austin Powers? That chair was in something. I've seen that chair before. It's a famous chair.
Well, you know, I set this room up and wanted to make it look like you're walking right in 1974, you know? And so I needed an egg chair. I remember it, oddly enough, from Mork and Mindy.
Oh, yeah, Mork and Mindy, too, obviously. Yeah, that was a great one. That makes sense. Is it hard to find an egg chair or is it relatively easy?
Well, I mean, I went online and found it. It was expensive, I remember, and it's really heavy. And so when it showed up, I was like, sheesh, I had to call friends to come over. They put it on my porch. And I'm like, I couldn't get it inside without help. But
it's a pretty cool chair. Okay. So now the band originally was called Apocalypse Blues Review. There we go. Look at that. Oh, I should stay there. Too far away though. But that looks so zen. Jesus Christ. Shannon, screenshot that for the image. That would be perfect. So you changed the name to Revival. And I think it's a crazy story because you have a new singer who was your drum tech in Godsmack and now is somehow the singer of this band. How did that even come about?
Well, what happened was I met, speaking of Cannibox and Kevin, my good friend Kevin, I was in a punk band from LA called Amen. Mm-hmm. And we put out two records, one on Roadrunner. We got dropped from Roadrunner. And then it was hardcore punk too. Our singer, Casey Chaos, was a maniac cutter guy. Like he would destroy my drums. It was a violent, if you like punk rock, check out Amen. The first record's just self-titled. The second one's called We Have Come From Your Parents. So anyway, we get signed to Virgin Records after Roadrunner dropped us. We got signed to Virgin, right? And which is really rare in this business. You know, you get dropped by one of, to step up like that. But Ross Robinson, who at the time was very legendary for discovering Korn and Limp Bizkit, you know, he was like the hot producer. He loved Amen. And so he signed us to his imprint, which was on Roadrunner. And so when we got dropped after that, he went over to Virgin. So that's how we ended up scoring the Virgin deal after the Roadrunner deal. Well, when we recorded the record, I had, you know, like there's a setup time in which the management and the label, they want 2 to 3 months, you know, to where you're supposed to just get out of the public eye and they, you know, hype your mm-hmm. shit. Yeah. And so I had like a 3 month period off. Well, we were managed by the great John Reese, who
of course,
y'all familiar with him, but of course, he's like a festival guy. He does all these really rad festivals, always has. But he used to manage Candlebox and he also managed Amen. So we got done the record, had a 3 month waiting period. And I get a call from my manager, John Reese, saying, hey man, Dave Cruzan, the legendary drummer, he played on Pearl Jam's first record. And then I guess, you know, had problems, alcohol, drug problems, right. Whatever. Got fired before Pearl Jam's record even came out. And Dave Abruzzo became the famous drummer from Pearl Jam. But the original guy, Dave Cruzan, played on that first big record. And
we just had him, well, his new band on, we just had on last week or 2 weeks ago. I forget the name of the band right now. James, you were with me. What was the name of that band? They just were on the show.
With Dave Cruzan?
With the, I can't remember. The guy from Candlebox, the guy from Pearl Jam. I can't remember the name of the band right now, but they were just on the show. Like literally, let me see if I can get this.
I don't think I was on that one, buddy.
I feel like, hold on, I'll tell you who they were.
Shannon, I saw Amen. I'm pretty sure I saw you guys in Vegas.
Sons of Silver. Boom. Sons of Silver. I just found it.
Ah, nice.
And he's in that band. So
he's an amazing drummer. Like I said, I, you know, that well, the proofs and the recordings that he's done. But so Candlebox was on their third record, Happy Pills. And Cruzan, I guess, you know, fell back off the wagon, how we do. And, and 2 weeks before Candlebox's tour for Happy Pills, they had a single on the radio, all this stuff, and Cruzan just disappears. And so they didn't know where he was, didn't hear from him. You know, some days passed, and then they panicked and said, we need a drummer for this tour. And so since our manager was their manager, you know, I got the call from John Reese saying, yeah, man, do you like Candlebox? I'm like, yeah, I love Candlebox. You know, who doesn't like Candlebox? And so he's like, well, you want to try out? And because they need a drummer. And I went and it was the coolest thing. I immediately hit it with Peter Collett and Kevin Martin. And they had this dude, Robbie Spider, who was the rhythm guitarist. And then Rob Reddick was the bass player at the time, you know. So it's kind of a different band, but it still had Pete and Kevin, you know. And they played all the old hits that everybody loves. And so that's how the whole thing happened. Well, I went back to the original question. I went and got the gig and they said, do you have a drum tech? And at the time, Amen, I did not. And so they said, well, and I'll never forget Kevin Martin. He's like, yeah, well, we got this dude, you know, Shane. He's like, he's not, you know, he's a super sweet guy. He's got a great heart. Not the brightest bulb, but he said that. Later on, as I became best friends with Shane, I busted Kevin and told him, yeah, Kevin said you weren't the brightest bulb. And they had a laugh over that. But so anyway, I got the Candlebox thing, went on, it was two tours. You know, the first leg was, I think, 5 or 6 weeks. And then we had a 2-week break and then another for 4 weeks out there, the first two tours on Happy Pills. So I did all of America with Cannibox. Incidentally, you know, headline, like my first arena gig ever was with Cannibox. I'd never headlined. I played arenas and all, but never headlined one. So that was a monumental moment in my life, not only because it was my first, like, you know, opportunity to be a rock star. Oh my God, headline an arena and all that shit I dreamed of all my life. But my father on that first leg had passed away and he had cancer. So, you know, I knew it was coming. Mm-hmm. But I had to cancel two shows to go and bury my father. Jeez. And the show that I came back to was the headlining arena gig. It was in Green Bay. I'll never forget it. You know, we pulled up and, you know, like pulled up to the arena and it was really cool. And I'll never forget on stage, you know, of course I'm thinking of my dad. I had a great dad. I had a great a family and I wasn't my, all my life was really like middle class normal. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. My parents loved each other and me and we.
Not like Shannon Heyer, who's human garbage. Continue.
Well, you know, everybody, you know, is different. And, you know,
a lot of the difference.
A lot of us have, you know, yeah, family issues. I didn't. So long story short, I get there and you know, the song, You, the famous song, it's for you, you know, of course. And he said, yeah, this one goes to Jim Lark and my dad and pointed up and I'm on stage in front of 10,000 people crying like a bitch, you know?
Wow. That's crazy though. It's such a nice moment though. Jesus. What happened with Amen though? You left Amen to do this. Well, did Amen cease?
No. We had a 3 month waiting period for the label to Virgin to, you know, try and set the record up and blah, blah, blah. And then we toured the world with Slipknot after that.
Oh, that's great. So, wow.
Well, I went out and basically did this, got to play with Candlebox for, you know, two tours and then got off the road with Candlebox and they were taking a break to find a new drummer or to find Dave Cruz and wherever he was. And, and so I told Shane and I said, hey man, you know, we're going out with Slipknot. We had the world tour, like a 6 month tour with Slipknot. And so I grabbed Shane and took him with me. And throughout that band and every other band I've been in, well, Godsmack came after Amen. So, but he's been with me for like literally over 20 years now.
Jesus. And when did you know though that he could sing? That's the weird question. So he's your drum tech for 20 years and then he becomes the singer of your band. Would he just sing backstage like when he was prepping the drums, hoping someone would listen or like, how did that come about?
No, what happened was, Tony, the guitar player for Godsmack and the Apocalypse, we've always like right away when I joined Godsmack, you know, we had a songwriting kind of magic between us, you mm-hmm. know, in which, you know, we could read each other's mind, man, musically, and we wrote songs so quick together to this day. But right away, you know, it took us about a year to feel each other out as musicians. And we just, you know, on the same page musically and, you know, we get each other. And so we started this side project, as you know, Another Animal, you know, because of the wealth of material. We just, you know, Sully would say, you know, give me 10 songs and we would write 30 songs and have all and give him, you know, the ones that we feel were Godsmack and Sully would like. And then we'd have all these songs which we felt were cool. So anyway, and we would just, you know, get high and drink tequila and like, you know, make music. It didn't matter. Like we weren't just always writing for Godsmack. We would play the blues. Well, the blues came later, but what we really loved, and this is getting to your question, we loved funk. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, so I started writing these funk songs and Tony's best friend from up in Boston area is named Chris. Right. And so he's a stand-up bass player. So now after Godsmack would rehearse and Sully and Robbie would leave, Chris would come over and Tony and I would just jam and make this funk songs. And we called ourselves Piss Ants. Right. And I had this
like old school funk, like a funk, like Parliament Funkadelic, that kind of vibe.
Well, mainly the main thing that I was influenced by as a kid that my parents just adored and turned me and my sister on to, we'd dance into, was Sly and the Family Stone. Right. That was the one. So I love, yes, to this day, man, Sly and the Family Stone, my favorite funk. But then, of course, the P-Funk came into it and you know, we started exploring all this funk. We really got into funk, right? We're like, we're going to be funk. And so, you know, we wanted to, I'm crazy sometimes with my ideas. So I'm like, all right, we'll be Piss Ants and then we'll we'll all wear black, like Reservoir Dogs, black and white, you know, and then we'll get these big ant masks made so we can be anonymous, right? So it's not the guys from Godsmack. It's right. Just whoever they are, like Kiss or Slipknot at the time, whatever. No one knows who we are. And that was the initial idea. And we wrote. And so anyway, so Tony and Chris and I are jamming, right? And Godsmack was going out on a tour. It was on the Four record. So my second record with the band. And Shane gets blown in usually at 2 to 3 days before we roll so that we can run the set and he can sit behind me and see what kind of electronic, what he needs to do, what he's got to look for. And so he was there and Sully and Robbie left after practice. Shane's there with me and Chris comes over. We get high. We start, you know, writing music, and Shane goes in the control room and hits record and starts singing to what we were just jamming on in there. And so we got done jamming and he goes, "Hey guys, come in here and check this out." He goes, "I just threw some vocals on what you guys were jamming." We would just do like 10 minute jams. And,
and he made up lyrics, just any lyrics that he was feeling?
He just had the lyric, I guess, from his thing. He ends up being, he's a lyricist and a vocalist and all this. His sisters all sang and all this shit I never really knew about him, you know? And so anyway, when we heard Tony and I walked in, he starts playing the song. We were just jamming, improvising on. And his voice was, it sounds exactly like on the new Apocalypse. He just has a sweet voice. It's got a little Bowie. It's got a little Roger Waters. It's got a little, you know, all my favorite singers, you know? Mm-hmm. And he has a super range. He can sing real like low and full in this baritone, like a Danzig Elvis kind of thing. He can get that. And then he can go wicked high and have a cool like falsetto like Bowie can do and whatever. So, and that was the main reason that he worked so well in the funk. If you listen to Parliament and mm-hmm. especially Sly and the Family Stone, which had lots of singers, you know, and female vocals. So there was all kind of different textures going through there. And I super loved that. And so we became, with the Piss Ants turned into, we wrote literally over 30 songs in a 2 year period in 4 different studios. And the manager, Paul Geary of Godsmack.
And of Extreme.
And he was the drummer and manager of Extreme. He manages Joe Perry. He used
to manage Steel Panther also, but not anymore.
Yeah. He had Steel Panther. But so Paul, you know, I sent him just on a whim. I'm like, shoot, man, this, you know, after we were demoing songs, it started sounding really good to us, you know? And so we sent Paul a demo and he's like, "Wow, dude, this is really good." And so he calls Sully, our boss and fearless leader, and says, "Hey man, you know, help these guys out. And let's," cause he was thinking with the, and I, by the way, I made a whole comic book and story about these ants, these piss ants at
wow.
Planet Piss or whatever I had. And, but it was all, you know, it was going to be about sex, drugs, and rock and roll and funk, you know, like.
As it should be. By the way, I refer to my bathroom as Planet Piss. Continue.
But,
Shannon looks disgusted. Not Shannon.
Mine would be Planet Shit. I think, but I'm like, but
I drink a lot of water. That's why it's Planet Piss.
I eat a lot of food. But, I guess meat. But, oh man, where was I? So, So Sully and Paul come in and say, "Hey man, you know, we got this idea. We love the comic book story. So what if you changed the name from Pissants and made the planet like Planet Funk, or, you know what I mean?" So I went off on this whole, you know, story about these ants from Planet Funk, and they came to the earth and you know, there's this woman, Princess Honey. There was a whole
a lot of drugs were involved, Shannon. That's what I'm feeling. There's lots of
acid in my 20s. So then we had, you know, Professor Depressor was the bad guy and all this shit, right? And so, and Paul Geary gave us 50 grand and put 50 grand into this project, right?
Wow.
So into the studio, man. I hired a horn section, got a chick singer backups, and to, you know, going for my Sly and the Family Stone vibe and shit. And we found this tailor in Arizona and a mask maker in LA. And we got, dude, I still have the suits in my rehearsal room. I got mannequins and put these 4 big ants, you know, around the rehearsal room. But so, you know, as for like, you know, the Paul and Sully were saying, "Oh, you know, you go for tweens." And that was what And so, you know, we start writing songs. I like funk and ice cream and shit like that, you know, like writing for like kids kind of, you know, and we had this other artist make like a cartoon character. So anyway, we had action, 8-inch action figures made of
Jesus.
I'm telling you, we were trying to market this thing. We had lunch boxes, man. We had pajamas, all this shit that we had done for 50 grand, you know, the suits, demo, all this shit. And so in the end, Paul shopped this thing, and he went to, you know, Pixar and Disney and Nickelodeon and all these big children's, you know, enterprises, I guess. Mm-hmm. And we didn't get signed.
So it never saw the light. The music never saw the light of day.
Not one show. We never even got to play with our masks.
Wow.
And so what happened then was, like, when it didn't get signed, then my initial idea for the Piss Ants was gone. And Shane at the time, then, so Godsmack, we went on tour. So the ants kind of got put to the side anyway.
Poor Shane, just a drum tech now holding an ant mask. It's like, God damn it, that really fucked me.
Exactly. But it's this business, you know.
Right, of course.
Super, like less than 1% of bands even get sung, let alone.
Probably less, a lot less than 1%, I would imagine.
Yeah, so, you know, at the end of the day, a year, Godsmack then went out for the four tour, which was over a year straight. And the ants kind of got forgotten. And then at the end of the four tour, Sully had decided to, let's take a year off and then take a year to write. So we were looking at 2 years off. So Shane, who's, you know, a drum tech, he had to go. So he went, you know, because he has to pay his bills and mortgage too. So he went and joined up with Bush and did their next world tour and blah, blah, blah. So I lost contact with Shane for like a year and a half. I was deep in the studio writing with Godsmack and all that shit. And so the ants kind of went away. And then our next record, Godsmack, whatever it was called, came out to, you know, whatever glorious success or whatever. And we fucking tore all around. But can I say the F word here?
Yeah, of course. Of course.
So we toured, you know, and then, you know, basically 3 records later and 12 years later, I had already started the blues band with Tony, and we just went from funk to blues
with an older singer that left after the second record, right? Because he's an old man,
and so that is, yes, he is 70, which is deemed old. So
not only deemed old, it is old.
It's old, man. But I feel like I'm over at 50, you know. But 53. But anyway, and my manager says, you shouldn't tell people your age. I don't give a shit, man. You know what? What do you mean? Not listen to my music because I'm older. I don't care. But anyway, so we got Ray. But let me tell how the apocalypse happened, though, in the first place. You know, we started writing. Like I said, Tony and I write all these songs. We got a wealth of ideas and creativity. Thank the lucky stars, right? And so we got a chalk eraser board, or an eraser board. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
With pens, pen eraser board. And
I believe the kids call that a dry eraser board.
Dry eraser board. That is it, my friend. So we got this dry eraser board, right? And so we only had a red pen and a blue pen. Oh, I'm sorry. It was a green pen. It was a green pen and a blue pen. Details, right? And so all the green, whenever we'd write a song that we felt Sully would like and could be Godsmack or it was rock or metal sounding, then we would put it up in green. And then when we would write blues songs, we would put it in blue, but we would always have like a name of the song, like whatever it was, a working title, like say, right, this reminds me of Fame by Bowie, we'd say Fame song or whatever.
I got you.
And we ended up, the ones we'd like, we would put a green star by the Godsmack ones that we deemed good enough to give to Sully, and then a blue cross went beside the songs that we wanted to be blues in our blues band. So after a while, we had a set, like 10 songs of blues songs, which ended up in our first record, right? And this was the review. And so obviously, once we started getting these songs together, we needed a bass player. And so incidentally, I was doing this building the band with Shannon Larkin of Godsmack or whatever at this local club and the local radio station, right? Mm-hmm. And so one night was drummer, then one night singer, one night bass player, one night guitar player, right? And so on the bass player night, I discovered Brian Carpenter. He won the night and he just slayed everybody. And I'm like, oh my God, this dude, right? So I approached him and said, hey man, we're doing this blues band. We're just calling it Blue Cross. Told him why, you know, we have a mm-hmm. Blue Cross in the songs. And we're just looking for a singer. And he's like, yeah, I'm in. He was in a band at the time called Blackfoot, which without Ricky Medlock, but Medlock was kind of like, I don't know, cashing in, you know, on the name or whatever, because he produced the band and wrote songs, but he wouldn't play for him. But anyway, so the new Blackfoot, Brian Carpenter from the Apocalypse was the bass player. And so I had all of a sudden this, the best bass player in Florida in my band and what I feel is the best guitar player in Florida.
And then you got somebody's grandfather to be the singer. Is that how that happened?
No. I was on a kick, man, where I wanted to be traditional blues. And okay. Like, I really wanted us to be traditional blues. And, you know, in the end, we wrote, you know, a lot of cool traditional blues songs. If you listen to the first record, there's some really cool, you know, traditional blues on that record. But what we couldn't help and what I didn't know from Tony Rumbola and myself, just being how we were raised, the music we were raised on, you know, we're both in our early 50s or whatever. And so
join the club.
Well, we couldn't like just be traditional blues. And so, you know, songs came out that were heavy and shit and started sounding like blues rock. And mm-hmm. I was like, I don't want to be blues rock. I want to be traditional blues. I want to play with Taj Mahal and I want to play whatever. And you know, and so I kind of, by the second record, you know, so let me get to Ray first. So you know why. So anyway, with this thing of wanting to be traditional blues, and we started, you know, trying singers out. And Ray was just a friend of mine that I'd met literally at the Ragged Ass Saloon, this biker bar. And, you know, he sat up, hey man, you know, and didn't know me even. I was in Godsmack or anything at first. And we just started talking. Next thing you know, he's like, hey man, have you heard of Joe Bonamassa? Blah, blah, blah. He turned me on to Joe. And I was like, wow. So we ended up, you know, hanging out. He invited me to his house. We go and I make Italian dinner and blah, blah, blah. Well, I didn't even know the guy sang, and I already had Brian, and we're now rehearsing these songs. And Ray, I see it. He turns me on to Bonamassa first, this DVD. And he
gets, did you not know Joe Bonamassa? That seems surprising, because I mean, he was so big, Joe Bonamassa. Is that like, well, you didn't?
This is 12 years ago.
Oh, even so, I don't know. Maybe I remember him from his first record. It was like everybody was talking about Joe when that.
Yeah, I talk about Joe, and Joe's amazing. He's incredible. But no, my world wasn't in the blues world at the time.
It makes me feel good that I was a little more in the know than you. Okay, continue.
Yeah, my thing was all, you know, I when I was like 12, 13 years old, my guitar player Terry Carter and Rathchild, he was the guy that turned me on to everything. He got me my first BJ, but we can talk about that later.
Whoa.
In the sex, drugs, and rock and roll section. Whoa. But anyway,
left field, Shannon. Jesus.
It's a great story. I mean,
we'll,
you know,
that was pretty cool.
Guy turns me on to Johnny Winter and the Three Kings and all the blues.
And blowjobs. Yeah.
God bless him. And then gets me my first blowjob.
I imagine the music sounded a lot better while some girl is sucking on your Johnson.
Well, I tell you, it didn't hurt. But
if it hurts, you're doing it wrong.
He turned me into a freak, though. But anyway, so
oh my God, this is the best.
My point is all my blues influences and what I was trying to mold the sound of the Apocalypse and the initial record was from Johnny Winter and obviously the Three Kings and even like Robert Johnson and all these blues legends that were from the very beginning of blues. And I'm like, we're going to be traditional blues. You know, I even had like a 4-piece drum set with 2 cymbals. I didn't have, well, by the second record, all that shit was out the window because I also felt like a fake. Kind of, and blues, the blues genre and the community is very snooty, man. It's like punk rock was in the early 80s. You know, we didn't let fuckers in. Like, if, you know, when I was at Black Flag in 1984, you know what I mean? And if some long haired guy comes in like me, you know, they might get punched in the face just because we don't want people in. It's our scene. Well, nowadays, even all the way up to very the current state of the blues genre, there's this snooty like blues people.
Really? That seems hard. I mean, you'd think that they'd be thrilled that anybody's that into the blues, or they'd welcome them with open arms these days. But what do I know?
Well, because it's about they're like they don't want change. All and right. So, you know, yeah. Stevie Ray Vaughan went through it through these people where he came out with his own kind of brand of blues, a Texas Shuffle, man. He changed blues from the traditional side of it, right? And so, you know, at first they were trying to shun Stevie Ray Vaughan, like he ain't blues or something, and he showed them. Well, anyway, the same thing happened from the Delta when all the dudes started going up north. B.B. King went up to Chicago, and, you know, B.B. King added horns and keys and all this stuff, made blues like this big sound, where in the Delta where it started, it was obviously just a guitar. They might have had a snare brushes, you know, for a beat or whatever. Most of these guys just played the clubs down there in the Delta with their guitars. So, you know, long story short, we get to the point where, oh, about Ray. And so when Ray tried out for the band, my mind frame was traditional, 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 right? And so Ray comes in. At the time, he's like 63 years old, you know, and but he had snow white hair. And he had a biker guy, tattoos, and he's a blues guy, you know. And when at that time I was at his house, I said, oh, you play? And he picks up his acoustic and starts playing the song and singing. And I'm also a huge Jim Morrison fan. And when he sang, it sounded just like Jim Morrison in his living room. And I was like, oh, my God. So I'm like, hey, dude, you want to come and try out for this band? He goes, well, I know a couple guys, you know. And I go, no, I mean you. Your voice. And he goes, oh, you've never even been in a band, Rafer. And so he came over and sang two songs with me and Tony, and we just hired him, man. It wasn't, and we were in Godsmack too, man. Like, we're like a hugely successful band. So we honestly did not care and don't care to this minute about any success of our side projects.
It's great because you have Godsmack to allow you the creative freedom.
That's right.
Which is a beautiful thing. Not a lot of people in your position take advantage of that to allow themselves to just have 180 creative freedom and do whatever they want because they don't need to worry about it and other than making yourself happy.
Yeah, and that's the beauty of this, man. And like this new record, I mean, even my singer Sully, you know, when he heard some, well, I'm already writing another record, but he heard some of that and he's like, dude, you know, you think, you know, you might be going a little too far in the left field here with the thing. And I'm like, I don't know, just take these mushrooms and maybe you understand.
Wow.
But, you know, so I'm just like, I'm so blessed to have Godsmack and Sully Erna in my life because it's enabling me to be able to do this music that I really can be. See, let me say this. I think that in the 70s, that's my favorite music, and I wish that I was born 10, 15 years earlier so that I could have been.
And then you would be your old singer's age.
I might have been playing for fucking, you know, I might have played for Janis Joplin, who knows? But I do know that, you know, at that time period in music, it was about being different. And like Bowie and Pink Floyd, and, you know, everybody would, and if you were different and unique and talented, of course, you know, but wrote good songs, but you're different, Ziggy Stardust, whatever. Then you got noticed and you got recognized. And nowadays, it's like the whole objective is to sound like everything else on the radio so that you can get on the radio and be successful, right? So if you're trying to be different in this world, you're not getting any commercial success because the radio won't even let you on. Because right. You don't sound like their protocol or whatever. And so I take and you know, it for what it's worth, you know, Godsmack, we roll right in there and we are a commercial rock, you know, band that we don't write for the radio, but our songs go on the radio and radio has always been awesome to us. So I'm not disrespecting radio in any sense.
It's also amazing. Like even Unforgettable, which is the record's 2 years old at this point. And now that track just charted in April. It's crazy that you're still getting play and still getting meat on the bone from that Godsmack record. It's crazy.
It's awesome. You know, yeah. I mean, it's unbelievable.
Can I ask a question just really quickly? By the way, you made this probably the easiest interview I've ever had to do in my life, so I appreciate it. But when you're writing these songs, so you have you're just writing, and then the ones you're just being creative, and whatever you feel goes to Godsmack, you put that on the Godsmack side. And whatever field goes to the other projects, you put on that side. And the ones that go to Godsmack, Sully will write lyrics too if he likes it. Is that a correct way to assess it?
And that's the thing. And that's why I started side projects in the first place. Not just because I like and think that every musician should explore different genres, even if you don't like it. Like I made myself, I'm not really a big country fan, you know? My dad turned me on to the early guys, like, you know, Johnny Cash, Waylon Jennings, you know, Hank Sr. and shit. Like, this was played in my house. I grew up in West Virginia. So, you know, that was played in my house. But I never, when the new country and all, you know, it rubbed me wrong. I just hated country music, right? Mm-hmm. So when I was looking for and preaching my thing too, play with different people. You're in the same band, you know, you start to know everybody and everything. You get into a Groundhog Day scenario,
right, where every song
you're trying to write, you're chasing your tail kind of. And so, you know, I've always been like, my advice to musicians, you know, have your band, have your guys, you know, have the dream, but also always try and play different genres. So anyway, learn, I've made myself try and write country music, try and write.
Oh, I mean, in listening to you speak for the last 40 minutes or so, you are so passionate about music. It's inspiring. It's crazy to hear. I mean, you've been in this business 30 years or so, I would imagine over 30 years now. And to hear you speak, it's inspiring. It's fucking inspiring, dude. Congratulations. It's amazing to see someone be this passionate about their vocation this far into their career. It's really is inspiring. It's great.
Well, thank you. And I'm glad that it's inspiring. I'm certainly still inspired every single day. And I can't be like thankful enough, man. I got koi ponds and shit, man.
And I also noticed you have a lot of turtles and snakes. I saw that on your Instagram.
I don't do snakes, but I have turtles. The snakes are just wild ones.
They're just wild ones out there. I guess. See, and you have like an albino turtle or something weird. It was a weird color, that turtle.
I do. I got a couple of albino turtles. I have 19 turtles in my pond and 4 in my house that are babies, the hatchlings. The albinos are hatchlings. And I have 23 koi fish in 2 koi ponds that are 150 yards apart and connected with a river that runs through my backyard.
Jesus Christ. It must be nice, Shannon Larkin.
So the fish can, like, you know, traverse between the two ponds. And I'm so excited about it because the pandemic made me do it. And so I had a 20-by-9-foot koi pond on my back porch, you know, and walk out, feed my they're beautiful fish. And, you know, and then the pandemic hits and I'm all of a sudden, our business is screwed. We can't leave our house.
Mm-hmm.
And my buddy, I was like, I'm going to add a second koi pond back in the back corner of my yard. And my buddy just jokingly said, hey, what if you connected them with the lazy river in your yard?
Jesus.
And I was like, and anyway, it was feasible. It's not technically a river or creek because you need an entrance and exit of water to make a flow.
Okay.
And so you can't really create that unless you do a circular thing with pumps, so what I did was I took this super pump and got an extra pond pump. These are one of those pumps that, like, if you go to Vegas and you see a fountain that's squirting literally 100 feet in the air, they're super powerful, right? And then I took a 2-inch flexi hose and hooked it up to this big ass pump and went through the whole river all the way.
Did you just kind of figure this out on your own?
I did. Wow. Me and 2 dudes built this whole thing, came in under 30 grand for something that's probably if I hired some place, it'd probably be 100 grand or some crazy shit. Like, we did it all ourselves, rented a backhoe, did the whole thing, right?
I rented a backhoe last week. Hello.
Was it your first time?
No, it was a sexual joke. That's all it was.
Oh,
it's unbelievable.
I mean, seriously, dude, like I'm 105 pounds soaking wet. And I'm like, this big fucking backhoe shows up. I'm like, dude, you know, from Home Depot, you know, and I'm like, you got to show me I've never been on one of these. He's, oh, it's easy, blah, blah, blah. It was okay. And I did it and all. But, oh, you want to hear a funny yard story? So, like, you know what an auger is?
No.
An auger is like a thing that you grab, like a jackhammer.
Okay.
But instead of being a jackhammer, it spins around like this. So you dig holes. It's a hole digger. So it goes and grinds down in the ground, right? And so I go to Home Depot and I'm like, I need an auger. I got to dig these holes. And so they say, oh, yeah, here's the single man auger, right? Well, so one man is supposed to be able to use this auger, right? And but I, like I said, I'm 105 pounds. And so I put it in and it, you know, it's the blade spins, but the top, you know, right. You've got pull. So when I turn it and it went down and the thing, I guess the blade hit a rock or something. So the top totally threw me, flipped me ass overhead, man, into my turtle pond area, which is like these sharp. I was bleeding.
Oh, my God.
I looked up and there's this, the auger was stuck in the ground, you know, and the top of it spinning around. So I reached up and I stopped it. And I turned that auger off and I was sitting there and I literally was bleeding and bruised and like, you know, and all of a sudden tap, 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 tap. It starts pouring rain. And I was just like, well, anyway, that's a funny.
We can't go on tour. Why? If an auger related incident, I can't go on tour right now. Let me.
All right. Before we go any further, they've been a sponsor for a while. Super cool dudes. It is Yo Kratom. YoKratom.com, home of the $60 kilo, shipped right to your door, no questions asked. If you don't use Kratom, you could stop listening to this ad, that's fine. But if you're looking to improve your Kratom game, then YoKratom is for you. It is direct wholesale prices, really high quality. Normally you pay $120, $180 for a kilo, but YoKratom.com is home of the $60 kilo. Can't go wrong with that. YoKratom.com. They have all different strains, and I've said this a million times. I know Shannon, who uses Kratom, uses them pretty much exclusively at this point. If you ever go to the bodega or the gas station, God knows where those fucking strains come from. And people that have had bad reactions to Kratom, it's probably because you bought shitty Kratom. Go to YoKratom.com, and you're getting high-quality curated Kratom directly from the source, and that's where the difference would be. Again, it's $60, direct wholesale prices. If you love Kratom, there's nowhere else to go but Yo Kratom at YoKratom.com. All right, let's get back into it.
Let's do a couple of quick things. The album comes out December 11th. The new single is The Doorway, which I really, really enjoy. The first single was Optimistic. Oh, look at that. Apocalypse Blues Rays wearing the merch. I can't believe how quickly this time went. It was hypnotic to listen to you. I want to do the first, Shannon, and then we got to wrap it up. So we'll hit the first right now.
The first time ever I saw concert, did drugs, had sex.
As you know, the name of the show is Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll. We start with the first band you ever went to, but we mean a band you're going to know, not someone that is like a local band. The first band you went to on your own volition, what band was that?
Well, the cool thing about this is the first band that I went to see ended up getting signed and not being a local band. They were,
oh, wow. They're,
and they're still around and they had a platinum record in the 80s and they're called Kix.
Oh, Kix were just on the show. We just had them on
last week.
That's so crazy.
And that's crazy. You, man,
I was, 12 years old. And I was 11 years old and they were called The Shoes at the
right.
First.
Yeah. We just talked about that. That's so wild.
Yeah, so I'm 11 years old, and I watched The Shoes. They opened up with Riff Raff by AC/DC. I'll never forget this shit because it made me, you know, it made me want to be a rock star. And so I walked up to Jimmy Chocolate, the drummer, after the show, and this is 1978 or whatever. Wow. And so he's rocking a Shoe shirt, and they were the hand-painted Shoe shirt that he had on. And, of course, like 1978, it's a half shirt, so it's cut off right here, right? So his stomach's showing. And I walked up to him, man, 11-year-old kid. He's probably 17, 18, who knows. But at the time, and I'm like, I'm going to be like you. I'm going to be a rock and roll drummer. And he goes, oh, are you kidding? He took the shirt off his back and handed me that Shoe shirt. Jimmy.
Oh, really? It'd be great if you still had it. I doubt you still have it, but that would have been cool.
I wish I did. Mm. I couldn't rock it because it's a half shirt, but I don't know. Maybe I would.
By the way, you know what's scary? At one point, I had gained a lot of weight, and I was pretty heavy, and I was literally almost three of you. I was 296. Oh, you're 105. I was almost three of you. That's pretty fucking scary. Okay, now, the first...
Unbelievable. I weigh myself every morning, and I'm not doing it enough. I need to cut weight, buddy.
If I stood up and lifted my shirt like you just did, Shannon, the other Shannon would throw up. That's what would happen right now. So now, the first drug you ever did after weed... Unless weed wasn't your first drug.
Well, if you count hash and opium,
I do. I think most people would.
Yeah. So, and so I've spoken weed at 12. I started smoking weed. And then I met my first singer, this dude. I won't even say his name on this because I don't know. But anyway, his brother, he came with this opiated hash. And I didn't know opium was part of the, you know, opiate, heroin, whatever. And so
the name wasn't a giveaway?
I mean, you know, you'd think, but I was a 12-year-old kid. And so anyway, he had that and it was black and it was marbleized. So the opium was like melted into it and it was super good. And then he had this blonde Lebanese hash that I remember smoking. And then my next drug, we would get lemon 714 Quaaludes, dude. I mean, wow. I'm old enough to have had lemons. When they got rid of those, by the way, they got rid of them. You couldn't even get knockoffs of them or for some reason. But they were awesome drugs, by the way. And we would crush them up and snort them. And then we'd crush them up and put them on our weed and smoke them.
Wow.
It had this chemical taste. And you got super stoned, but it was like, it was more like a Valium 5 or something where you're not fucking, you know, passing out, you can enjoy it, you know.
You really don't hear the term Quaalude anymore. That's a very 70s drug.
I love that.
It's pretty wild. Yeah. And now the first time you had sex, although I kind of want to hear the blowjob story as the story, even though it's not technically sex.
Okay, Bill Clinton. Well, my first sexual encounter, I was 8.
What?
I was raped. And well. And I went, but it was awesome. And I know that sounds horrible, but I'm a boy. And so
I haven't heard that in a while, sir. That sentence has not been said in a long time. I just want you to know that.
By the way, isolate that and we'll share that. Anyway, continue, Shannon.
Oh, man.
Yeah. If taken out of context, I'm sure that sounds awful, but put into context. So I'm 8 years old and my dad's best friend, Mr. Beep guy, he would drop me off and his 16-year-old, my friend Davey was his name because that doesn't blow anything. But anyway, Davey, and he was also 8, by the way. And so I would go to Davey's and my dad and my mom would go out with Davey's mom and dad who were friends, right? And so hit Davey's 16-year-old sister, who I won't mention her name. She's dead now. But she was on all kinds of drugs. And so one night she got me and Davey on the bed and had us stripped down. We're 8, by the way.
That's crazy.
And did all this cool stuff to us. And it was so cool that I told my dad on the way home, man. I was like, oh, my God. And she had my pee-pee in her mouth. And he had a Lincoln Continental. I'll never forget it. He slammed on the brakes when I said that. What? My pee-pee in her mouth, Dad. It was awesome. You know, my mom was like, oh, my God.
Oh my God, that's crazy. Oh my God.
He turned around, went back. He had a baseball bat in the trunk, got out with the baseball bat. This is his buddy, you know. Fucking went up, knocked, you know, what the hell's wrong, Jim? You know, and you know, your daughter raped my boy or whatever. And it was this big deal. But to me, I was like, well, it was pretty awesome to me.
I thought maybe there was a chance that your father was running back to the house so he could put his pee-pee in her mouth, but maybe not.
He was fucking pissed.
Can I confirm something? So this is Davey is your friend, and this is Davey's sister?
Yes. And Davey's sister did it to Davey, too.
Oh, my God. That's crazy. She was definitely something wrong with her. That's crazy. I mean, not enough. We already knew that you were 8 years old. There's something little off of there, but she put her brother's pee-pee in her mouth. That's also weird.
It wasn't just mouth, guys, by the way. You know, we did it. It was cool. But anyway, so I didn't know what the fuck. I had to go and tell everybody, I mean, all the doctor that I, you know what I mean? Now I have a problem, I guess. And so I was like, I didn't understand it. I thought it was fucking awesome. I was like, wow, that was awesome. So 2 years passed and I basically was in my bed, right? And my sister's best friend, we'll call her Lisa. My sister sent her over and said, my brother. And so I was 11. I was 11 at the time. So my brother still hasn't been laid. And only he just has this memory of being abused or whatever.
At 11.
So she tells her friend to go over. So her friend sneaks over into my room and just gets him. I'll never forget. He gets in bed, just pulls my pants down and gets right on it, man. I was 11. Oh, wait,
you had sex at 8 and 11.
Yes.
Together, that
sister's friend.
And I'm not even all fucked up in the head. Well, not too fucked up. I mean,
it was your sister's friend that just came in and had sex with you.
I'll tell you, it took all of 2 minutes. And so I rectified that like 20 years later. I was like, hey, man, you know, it's grown a lot since then, by the way. You
know? It's crazy that if you add up your first and second time, it's still younger than when most people have sex the first time.
I know. Aren't I lucky? So
Well, they
call me lucky behind my back. So anyway, so that was the last time I had sex until I was 13. And then still
young. Jesus Christ, you're saying it like 13 is old. 13 is still pretty young.
Well, yeah, but that was, and then this is the story of Terry Carter. And so Terry Carter brings this chick over to watch our band. We called ourselves Atlantis. We ended up being Rathchild and getting signed to Atlantic 15 years later or whatever. But we were Atlantis at that point. It was just the two of us. And we would play like Creedence Clearwater and Heart and all these 70s bands. Anyway, and so he brings this girl over who's like watching us with starry eyes already. And downstairs where we rehearsed, you know, was my mom's laundry room, right? And Terry says, hey, come in here. I want to show you something. And we went in there and he's like, go ahead. And she dropped right on her knees, man, and just
took it. He said, go ahead? And that was all it took?
Yeah, and that's all it took. She was, so he had talked to her before. Anyway, right. So he's standing right there smiling, watching. And I was just like, this is so weird.
And Shannon, I want you to take lessons from this. Next time I say to you, go ahead, you're going to know what it means. Continue.
And then I remember too, like, I don't know if this is everybody, but you would get the orgasmic feeling, but nothing shot out yet. But you'd still feel like
right,
it.
Because you were nine or whatever it was. That's probably why your system wasn't firing on all cylinders, Shannon.
Shannon, I think I figured something out too. You know how we were talking about how you were the third, you're the third album of everyone, right? You had sex at 11 and 8. What's 8 minus 11? Motherfucking 3, baby. It is the magic number. Schoolhouse Rocks, baby. Schoolhouse Rocks. It's the magic number, Shannon.
I've also decided you are one of the most luckiest people on the planet in this listening to the show. That's pretty wild. It's pretty wild.
Yeah, Shannon, who should I bet in football this weekend? Holy shit, man.
That's God really damn. Crazy. Wow, it's really, really wild. Crazy stories. My God. And now you're in the biggest rock band in the country. If not, you know, it's pretty wild. Just what a great story. Jesus Christ. Okay, so the new Apocalypse Blues Revival album comes out December 11th. The new single, The Doorway, we will play this week as part of our... we add a song to our playlist every single week. Is there a new...
Tell me what you think about it. I mean...
I love The Doorway. I think the first song I dug, but I really like The Doorway Speaks to Me. That one I like a lot. I listen to both of them. I think Optimistic is a cool song, but it's something about The Doorway I liked even more. I really liked. I listened to that one a few times.
Well, Optimistic is the strange song on the record. That, incidentally, was a Funky Ant song.
Oh, really? Oh, that's funny.
I kind of thought it was so cool, and the lyric is relevant for right now that the change is coming and all that, right. And this was pre, you know, Trump Biden war or whatever, and when I wrote the new lyric to that. But and you know, the odd thing, and makes it the odd thing out on the whole record, is that it doesn't have a guitar solo.
Okay.
You know, and so it has a sax solo, but anyway, so The Doorway has a killer lead guitar solo.
Yeah, Doorway's great. That really is a great song. It's a great song.
That first line that came to me on a European tour, but that's a cool line, right? The doorway to infinity is through, or the doorway to divinity is through infinity.
Great. You're a deep man, sir. Way deeper than me. I could tell you that. Just looking at your backgrounds and everything, you're more spiritually in tune with yourself than I am or ever could pretend to be. Anything else you want to plug before we go around the room, Shannon?
No, I mean, I would like to just say real quickly that, you know, for anybody who's interested in what Godsmack's doing, we're going to start writing at the first of the year, and we have the luxury, and we're very appreciative and very thankful that we have this luxury. But so we're going to take the whole next year to just write and record a new record and not even think about touring, let the country hopefully, you know,
reset. Yeah.
Normalize, you know, and then 2022. So 2021, just in, I think, March, April, keep your eyes open for an apocalypse tour. It'll probably only be on the East Coast, and who knows what kind of availability the clubs and whatever we'll have. You know, if it's 50% capacity, we don't know. We don't care. We're going to get out there.
Yeah. You know. All right, that's great. James, your plugs?
All right, man. First of all, Shannon, I'll never be president, but if I ever do, you're in the cabinet. I'll give you like six roles. You're the greatest. I mean, it's unbelievable. Whatever you want, you got it.
And I will say this, James, by the way, before you do your plugs, Shannon's done Shiprocked a bunch of times. He's like the most beloved. He's like the mayor of Shiprocked when he's on the boat, as you can probably guess.
Brother, you could be the Pied Piper. I'd follow you into a fucking fire right now, Shannon. Holy shit. And you also, if we were walking in the fire, you're so lovable. I'd be like, yeah, let's burn. I don't care, man. You'd make it sound fun.
Yeah, I would say there's probably blowjobs on the other side of this fire.
Yeah, I'm too old to get them, apparently. I'm fucking 42. Apparently, you don't know Pythagorean when you get blown. It's unbelievable. This was great. So check me out. Follow me at The James Mattern, Instagrams, YouTubes, whatever. I'm there, man. Also, the Commissioner of Comedy Podcast. We're blowing up, baby. Just had a tribute to the Creek in the Cave. I just talked about my first time on stage. It is a comedy journey, comedy etiquette. It's whatever. It's about passion. You listen to it, you will run into the fire, okay? You don't even need Shannon to lead you. You will just run into the fucking fire because you go to fire it up, dog.
I'll go on and check it, I promise.
That's my right. Boy, Shannon.
Now, Shannon Heyer, your turn.
I'm sorry. I'm not as energetic as James, but listen to my podcast, The Thing Is Ding. We talk about bad dates, fighting, and ghosts. It may not get you fired up, but it'll make you think about the afterlife, about paranormal, et cetera, et cetera. It's very fun.
I would imagine that Shannon Larkin believes in ghosts.
I do.
I knew it.
This is the greatest.
Actually, to bring it all full circle, I just booked Mark Schenker of Kix on my podcast for next week.
So. Oh, good. Yes. Isn't that cute?
Yeah. Mark is a great, great, great guy, man. They're all just super. I think it's something in that area that I grew up in. It's like Maryland, Pennsylvania, Virginia, West Virginia, right? And that's where like Dave Grohl's from. And it's when you meet people from that area, I don't know if it's something in the water, but we seem to be pretty well adjusted and friendly people. I mean, you know, maybe, like I said, you know, it's so close to DC. I don't know how that happened, but.
Shannon, any other plug, Shannon?
Just follow me on Instagram at ShannonLee6982.
Okay. Really quick. Follow me everywhere at I Am Ralph Sutton. My other podcast, Good Sugar, is blowing up, which is also about health and wellness. And I put out a book. Shannon, I've not talked about this yet, I think, on this show. So I'm talking about it now. I'm holding it up right now. It is called The 100% Guaranteed Guide to Weight Loss and Fitness by Ralph Sutton. It is a perfect book for Christmas stuffing because why? It is this. Chapter 1, page 1, eat less. Page 2, chapter 2, work out more. And the rest of the book is blank. That is it. It is out now on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. And if you want a friend that's been struggling with weight loss over the years, get them this book. It is guaranteed. You follow those rules, you will lose weight and get in shape. I got to say this, man. I could listen to you talk all day, Shannon. It really is hypnotic. We said the new album comes out December 11th. We're going to play The Doorway now. We add it to our playlist, thestrshow.com. You can add the playlist on Spotify. And thank you so much, Shannon, for being a part of the SDR show.
Listening to the SDR Show.